This is Adam Chartoff of FilmWax Radio, and you're listening to one of several dispatches from the True False Film Festival in Columbia, Missouri. This is the 10th season of this very unique documentary film festival. So I'm taking time to not only talk to various filmmakers, but also those who work with or attend the festival. My guest today is documentary film director and producer Esther Robinson. So we're talking with Esther Robinson, who is one of the co-chairs of the Cinema Eye Honors and also is a film producer and a film director.
I started as a producer, then I went to be director, and then I went back to producing.
We're here at the True False Festival, mm-hmm. which, as we were saying, kind of explores those boundaries, the fuzzy lines between what is a documentary and what is the other thing.
Right. Yeah.
Because I understand there are films that are not documentaries. And let me also ask you, what has been for you the draw to documentary filmmaking? It's kind of where you've always been.
Even in film school, I was a documentary person. I like people. Mm-hmm. I like real people, and I like cinema, and I like real people, and it's where those two things come together.
It's true.
I also think that if you have ADD, which I have a touch of, and you're looking to have a really fulfilling, not incredibly lucrative, but a really fulfilling life,
yeah.
Documentary is eternally challenging. There's always problems. So if you need stimulation, if you're an mm-hmm. adrenaline junkie, it's a great place to make a professional practice because there's always something to do.
And as a new mom, you will find also navigating that, how you raise a child with careers and all the other things in life, that each day is a challenge just to figure out how to get through it, you know, and making sure everybody's at the end of it is
intact.
Intact, exactly.
Yeah. I think with documentary, you learn to say like, oh, the limbs are all on, it's okay.
Yeah.
So far, I felt like being a documentary filmmaker and producer has served me quite well with parenthood, where you're in a lot of chaos, you're underslept, you have to make a lot of big decisions on,
right.
you know, limited information, but a big heart and some fat compassion, and do your best.
We were saying just a moment ago, we were talking about the emergence of these young filmmakers now who are, to me, that doesn't seem they're so encumbered with you know, the legacy of documentary necessarily. I'm not saying they don't honor it, but you guys have started the SWAMI program here.
David and Paul did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What was that?
That happened in 2007. Actually, my film was here. I wasn't in the SWAMI program that year.
Right.
And
we want to mention also 2013 is the 10th year of True False.
Yeah.
This is now the fourth year of the SWAMI program. Is that, I guess that?
I my mouth is so
doesn't
bad.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Fifth or sixth.
2007, yeah. 8, 9, 10. Oh, no.
Yeah, I know, right? Exactly.
Your math is bad. Wow.
I was like, my math is bad, but also my sense of time is bad. I feel like I've led one long day since December, and I have no idea what the
right.
year is. So David and Paul started it in 2007, I believe, and I came on board as a SWAMI the following year. I think David had a lot of, and Paul both had a lot of different reasons, I think, for doing it. But I think the most basic one, which was totally, totally true, was that, you know, first time directors, they hit the festival circuit, having spent, you know, sometimes 5-6 years making a movie. The final push for a film that lasts 3 months is a blur of cash and no sleep and, you know, cash flying out the door and fear and all sorts of things. It's a very intense, heady time. Especially if you get accepted to an A or B list festival, you know, a high profile festival, and suddenly you're just in this mad dash, and then you just hit this festival, and people, if you're lucky, if your film is strong, they're making you offers. You're having to navigate all this new information, and you don't, you know, like as a seasoned filmmaker, there's about 15 people you can call. Like I have a huge Rolodex. You know, someone makes an offer to me, I can in short order tell if it's a fair offer, if it's close to market, like I, you know, just by making a few phone calls. But as a newbie, you have no idea. You don't want to make the wrong decision. You're generally exhausted and really broke, and so you're pretty exploitable, and you're just sort of launched into the world with no one to call, no one to help you navigate. And what Paul and David decided to do was to demarcate and say, okay, these filmmakers often come to True False. Mm-hmm. They're here. Why don't we spend some time with them, give them some mentors, bring in a number of people from the industry who will talk candidly and who are generous in spirit, who would be candid and also willing to be helpful probably over time, and give the filmmakers access to those people mm-hmm. and create sort of a program around it. And that was the sort of the genesis of the SWAMI program. David Wilson had participated in the Creative Capital Foundation professional development program, which I had helped build. And which is, has a very similar spirit. Like we yes. put generosity at the core. We insist that people come ready to give and excited to make connections and to help people navigate. And so I think that was a small influence on his decision to do this as well. And it's just thrilling to see that practice move. But again, knowing David, mm-hmm. his spirit is generous in and of itself. And whether or not Creative Capital had been there, I think he would have come to that same conclusion. Mm-hmm. Exactly the same way. So it's become this place where, you get these mentors who've navigated the festival circuit, navigated sure. Deal making, navigated, those people can assist you to understand all the next steps in front of you.
So are the SWAMI filmmakers who are participating in the program, are they at the point where they've made their film and now they're ready to find the distribution.
Yeah, so this isn't about giving feedback to the actual film itself.
No, right. That's a different program.
So
you've got a film in the bag here.
Not only do you have a film in a bag, but they are premiering at a high level film festival.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
So they've already demarcated that some stuff's happening for them.
Yes.
So oftentimes the people that are in the SWAMI program are on the cusp of a distribution deal or have premiered at one festival and are trying to make a decision about breaking into international festivals. The international filmmakers are trying to figure out the U.S. market.
Gotcha.
They're trying to navigate a lot of sort of complex questions.
Yes.
But usually there's a fair amount of momentum behind the films.
Giving them the information they need to make the best decisions they can.
Exactly. And uh-huh. and unfettered, the mentors,
in desperation,
there's a cone of silence around that space.
Yeah. Right,
so,
yes.
So honesty is a really important thing. So it's a chance to say, you know what, that distributor's a crook. And that's something I'm never going to say that on a panel.
Right.
Or actually, I probably might because I have no filter.
Right.
But
no, they wouldn't let me in.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. No, because, and also I understand that this number of the these secret screenings here.
Are there
films. And so that's also something you want to keep under wraps on it, right?
Exactly.
And some published, and not publish those names and not leak them because that might
hurt their premier status.
For world premieres or local premieres, regional premieres.
So, and then the other thing is that David and Paul, they choose a range of mentors. So you may get actually conflicting information, right? High level conflicting. And I think that's actually also very important. I think the filmmakers are not being led to a set of preordained ideas or decisions that they're given, high quality information, but they're still asked to make the decisions and the next set of actions on their own.
I understand. And how many filmmakers are in a program, roughly?
I think generally there's around seven mm-hmm. or eight.
Yeah.
Filmmakers, sometimes they're teams. We see a lot of teams.
Sure.
And usually there's the producer and the director and the producer are both, I think it's required for them both to attend.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually from all over the world. But the unifying thing is that it's their first film.
Oh, and it's their first film.
Yeah. So
right. Well, that would make sense.
Yeah.
And then the SWAMIs, mm-hmm. there's a number?
Yeah,
mentors,
I mean, I think it usually matches the number of people, so
okay,
seven or
good.
Eight, yeah.
All right, oh, very good. And this year, were you in a role that was sort of SWAMI, but also plus?
I think there's a number of us, Judith Helfand, and I have spent a lot of time working at various degrees with David mm-hmm. and Paul in refining it, simply because we're passionate about it and we feel like their program is really strong. And the three of us have all built programs on our own. Judith Helfand does Chicken and Egg, and Jess Search does Brit Docs. And so all three of us have a passion for helping this kind of filmmaker. So all sometimes someone will do the intro, sometimes they'll do an extra, sometimes you won't say anything.
Sure.
I mean, none of us never say anything because all three of us are chatty. But so we take varying things. But this, to be clear, this is David and Paul's baby and we uh-huh. assist on helping the baby, but it's not no one else is doing it. It's really their hard work.
Sure. And what you're doing on some level, degree by degree, is so empowering a generation of filmmakers. That way documentary filmmakers and the community become more equipped. It helps you, but it kind of gives back.
Yeah, I also would say that for me, this is an Esther thing, this is everyone's mm-hmm. thing, but for me, I think that one of the great values of the documentary film community is that actually for the people that stick with it, these are friends and colleagues you will have for 20, 30 years. Like you're not, we get caught up in this idea that we're making one movie, or we've made this one movie, and this one movie must, you know, be a success or failure, or we'll die. But truthfully, our goals are to make, you know, 80 years of work. And so if you're going to make 80 years of work, your relationships with people are such that they may reject your film. They may reject four films and you may make 20. They may reject all your films and they would take one. And the one they take is one they feel passionate about. So to me, the other thing that the SWAMI program does is it allows people to see the you know, the people that they would who may be rejecting their films in a different context as a person, as someone who cares about film, as someone who cares about them. And it's my hope that through that process, they can learn to be gracious about, you know, sometimes your film isn't right. And that doesn't, and, you know, and like, so at the, Kirby Dick gave the keynote within the Potomac program yesterday. And, you know, it was interesting because Tom Quinn was there and he had, you know, when he was at Magnolia, he had bought his film, but he rejected a different film, you know, like, and there, and Jess Search, when she was at Channel 4, had bought, was the only TV person in the world to buy Sick, you know, and this is years ago. Mm-hmm. And so it was, I feel like it's important for them to see that not only are you trying to make deals, right, and trying to make your film a success, but you're also trying to build relationships, and those relationships hopefully will be strong enough to withstand rejection, withstand deprivation, and withstand like many, many hours on the road in crazy places. And at the same time, be filled with joy and excitement. And you can get in that one room a palpable sense of how these people who, you know, who are important, right? They do have power. It's important to recognize that, right? But they also care deeply, deeply, deeply about first-time filmmakers, about filmmakers in general, that they're not in this simply as a business practice, and they're not in it to make you feel bad. Yeah. They're truly in it because they care deeply about cinema and filmmakers.
What is the selection process?
I have no idea. No. I just show up.
But it's through David and Paul.
David and Paul. I mean, I think David and Paul, you know, they're using the traditional screening process, and then identifying the first-time filmmakers, and then obviously a large number of them are secret screenings or post or Sundance films that are already premiered.
Oh, so it's done sort of in tandem with the programming
process.
That's
my guess, because it'd have to.
Makes sense. And so I just wanted to make sure that we hit on one thing, which I'm very interested in a personal way, which is an upcoming film that you're producing called Strong Island.
Uh-huh.
And it's a little early to speculate too much about it, but I know it'll be in the next festival cycle and on maybe a broadcast on a popular documentary series, hopefully. And so what was that process work like in partnering with Yancey Ford? Sounds like a very intense subject.
It is. You know, as a producer, I end up doing a lot of work with first-time directors.
Mm-hmm.
I have a sort of a, I kind of love them, mostly because I don't have a ton of time and I don't want to do a ton of work in certain regards. So mostly my producing right now is I won't do anything I don't want to do. And I'll do stuff that is super effective. It's easier to be super effective to somebody that doesn't know anything because in four phone calls, you can fix something. Yancey first came to me because she's making a movie about a family trauma. Her brother was killed in, was shot and killed. She's African-American and the shooter was white. And the police had originally really only investigated her brother and the shooter was not even charged. And her family was very traumatized by this event and didn't fight it, even though they really probably had grounds to. It's about 2 weeks before Rodney King, so it was this huge deal afterwards. So they just, you know, a lot of different issues were coming into play nationally around race that I think really compelled her family to decide to stay safe as opposed to fight. And Yancey's going back now, you know, 20 odd years later to uncover what happened and why.
Yeah.
Yancey first came to me as a friend referral. Because I'd made a movie about my family. And she really wanted more emotional advice about, like, how do you make a movie about your family when your family is pretty conflicted about what happened? They're conflicted about whether or not they want you to make a movie. And there's a lot of grief and sadness. And how do you navigate that? Yancey is a very seasoned producer. She's producing for POV. She's an incredible eye, an incredible aesthetic. And once we started talking, I realized that there were similarities. When I made A Walk into the Sea, I was a very seasoned producer. I'd been at Creative Capital for many years. I did a live from Off Center. I had a very strong aesthetic, but again, no experience making films really. And so I had a lot of trouble doing that. A lot of like DPs didn't really listen. People didn't want to listen to my vision. And I think part of that was being a woman and part of that was being new. And I felt in talking to her that she was having some of those same struggles. Her sample tape at that point didn't match the aesthetic she was talking to me about. And so ultimately I just felt like, wow, I really want to help this person with this vision. I think she's a strong vision. I think she's an incredible aesthetic talent. And I want to help her in a way that I wasn't helped, you know, to really have a champion, to someone that can really build out,
yes,
you know, so So I just asked her, like, you want help? You know, you want me to do this? And we've been a good match. We're good. Yeah. We're a good team. Also, you know, I have to say that Yancey has this fabulous partner, Amanda, who's also basically a producer as well. Mm-hmm. And I think the three of us are good at getting this movie made.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to it coming out or being something I can see soon. Thanks for fitting this conversation in today.
Given, oh, my pleasure. Given my snoring baby in the background.
It says, music to my ears. Esther Robinson, film producer, director, co-chair of the Cinemai Honors.
And True False Swami.
True False Swami and mother of Otis. Not in that order, I might add, in terms of importance. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Oh, appreciate my it. Total pleasure.
Okay. This is Adam Shartoff, host of FilmWax Radio, the independent film talk show, Wednesday nights, 6:30 to 7:30 on bboxradio.com.